Good afternoon, everyone. I hope that everyone is well. Thank you again for joining us for our spotlight on Romania and Russia. My name is Kimberly Williams. I'm an outreach and recruitment officer with the Institute of International Education. I'm also the recruitment lead for both Romania and Russia. I'm joined today by my colleague, Joel Erickson, who is the Fulbright Program and International Director. We're also joined today by two dynamic and distinguished scholars to share about their time abroad, insight into the application process, and their Fulbright experiences. Please feel free to type your questions in the chat box throughout the presentation, as we will have a Q&A session at the end. Also, if you're having any issues hearing us or seeing the presentation on your screen, please let us know via the chat box. This webinar will be archived and posted on our website within a couple of days. At this time, I'm going to turn the floor over to our guests to introduce themselves, starting with Dr. Slider. Daryl?
Yes. So I'm Daryl Slider. I'm at University of South Florida, though now retired, so Professor Emeritus. And I've actually been on two Fulbrights, one in 2004, 2005, and then most recently 2 years ago, 2017 to 18. And so I'm a political scientist and deal mostly with regional politics issues.
Thank you so much, Daryl. And we will move on to our second guest, Dr. Sullivan.
Hello, everybody. I'm Dan Sullivan. I'm at Oregon State University. I had the privilege of being a Fulbright Scholar in Romania in 2016 and 17. I was hosted by the University of Ag Science and Veterinary Medicine in Cluj-Napoca. That's the second largest city in Romania. And I'll be talking to you today about some of the details of that experience and look forward to your questions.
Thank you, Dan. Before we discuss the experiences with our alumni, I'd like to give a brief overview of the Fulbright program and highlight award opportunities in both countries. Next year, the Fulbright program will be celebrating its 75th anniversary, which is very exciting. The Fulbright program is an international exchange program created in 1946 by Congress and is sponsored by the U.S. Department of State. The Fulbright program partners with countries around the world to provide opportunities for passionate and accomplished faculty, administrators, artists, journalists, lawyers, and other professionals from all backgrounds to study, teach, or conduct research on Fulbright grants. The heart of our mission, which you will hear pretty frequently throughout your experience with Fulbright, is to provide mutual understanding between nations, advance knowledge across communities, and improve lives around the world. Diversity and inclusion is at the forefront of our mission. Fulbright strives to ensure the program reflects the diversity within U.S. society. We are actively recruiting diverse pools of applicants from a variety of institutions to include community colleges, minority-serving, and rural institutions. As stated on the screen, opportunities are open to people regardless of their race, color, national origin, sex, age, religion, geographic location, socioeconomic status, disability, sexual orientation, or gender identity. At this time, I'd like to turn your attention to Romania. Currently, the country is offering 9 grant opportunities open to professionals and academics at all levels. Applicants from diverse disciplines to include STEM, the humanities, and social sciences are sought. I'd like to highlight a few awards on the screen. Award 11269, Bucharest University of Economic Studies, is seeking applicants in fields to include business law, economics, mathematics, HR, sociology, public policy, and social work, in addition to numerous others, to teach and or research for 1 semester. The award is open to academics of all levels. Award 11266, University of Politehnica of Bucharest is seeking applicants in the fields of biology, chemistry, computer science, engineering, environmental sciences, information sciences, and physics to teach and or research for one semester. Again, this award is also open to academics of all levels. A couple of more awards in Romania that I'd like to highlight would be 11271. Ovidius University of Constanța is seeking applicants in a variety of fields to include anthropology, chemistry, creative writing, education, environmental sciences, law, and social work to teach and or research for one semester. This award is open to academics of all levels. And finally, for Romania, Award 11266, professionals and academics of all levels are sought in the disciplines of digital society, digital humanities, science, technology, and society, or cybersecurity to teach and or research between 4 and 9 months with academic institutions within the country. Moving on to Russia, and Joel, please feel free to chime in about some of the awards that are being mentioned. With Russia, there are 5 diverse grant opportunities that are offered. I'd like to highlight Award 11280, Community College faculty with an MA and a minimum of 5 years college-level teaching experience are sought in a variety of disciplines to include healthcare, the energy sector, natural resource management, tourism, hotel management, HR, adult continuing education, and fine arts for 1 or 2 semesters. In addition, there's Award 11282. Distinguished chairs are sought in the disciplines of agriculture, biology, chemistry, economics, education, engineering, or environmental sciences to teach between 4 and 9 months at Russian State Agrarian University. And finally, for Russia, we have awards 11519. Distinguished chairs are sought in sustainable development to teach advanced courses for graduate level students between 4 and 9 months at the Higher School of Economics, Moscow Faculty of Law. And award 11278, academics of all levels to include early career are sought to teach or conduct research at any institution of higher education within the country. Proposals for research outside of Moscow and St. Petersburg are preferred. There is a preference, however, for the discipline of African American literature and Native American studies.
Thank you all. This is Joel Erickson chiming in now. Welcome, everyone. I'm so glad that you could join us today. I just wanted to say a few more things about Russia that I hope that you'll find useful and encouraging to apply for an award. Just to give you some background, the Russian Federation has been very focused on internationalizing their campuses. And so despite perhaps some of the negative things you're reading in the news regarding the bilateral relationship between the United States and Russia, things on the ground, especially at the universities, are far more welcoming, if not just plain warm. And secondly, to do research in Russia, of course, you almost certainly need to have strong Russian language skills. But you should note that now in Russian universities, teaching courses, having courses available that are taught in English, as I should say, is highly prized. So if you're interested in teaching in Russia, we would welcome your application, even if you don't have Russian language skills. And then finally, you don't have to have placement beforehand at a Russian university to participate in this competition to send us an application. It's great if you do, but we are very experienced at placing scholars for research or for teaching all over Russia, and we have a lot of great universities that have been really welcoming hosts. So we're finding that even people coming over with families with no Russian language skills or any Russian language experience at all have found themselves very well supported in the Russian university setting. So I just wanted to say that to encourage any of you who might be interested in Russia who otherwise wouldn't apply, don't worry about the Russian language for one thing, and don't worry about your placement. We can help with that too. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Joel. At this time, we will hear from our alumni regarding their Fulbright experiences. And Daryl, we can start with you. If you can share a little more about your path to Fulbright, why did you decide to apply for Fulbright, and what were the factors, if any, did you have to consider before applying?
Well, there are a lot of personal factors, of course, involved in a decision like this. I have a house, and so what do you do about taking care of it while being gone for an extended period? I had questions for my university. What kind of leave could they give? Would it be paid leave? Previously, when I had, 15 years ago, when I had gone on a Fulbright to Russia, I had gotten a sabbatical and used that as part of the process. More recently, our university, University of South Florida, has made a much more liberal policy, so they actually pay full salaries to anyone getting a Fulbright, which has been very effective at increasing interest in the program, as you can might imagine. So there are those kinds of factors. I think a Fulbright, though, has a lot of advantages on other ways of going to a country like Russia or Romania, too, I think. Because you know, it's an environment where, particularly if you don't have background in the country, it's good to get someone there to help you determine where to go and where to apply. As Joel Erickson said, they can help in determining good institutional matches for the kind of skills you could bring. So, you know, those kinds of factors. For me, of course, going to Russia is very much related to my research, and so that's why I've been there very frequently. And Fulbright just gives an additional kind of level of support and provides more opportunities. I've gone on two types of exchanges. The first one I went on was half teaching, half research, and then the more recent one 2 years ago was virtually entirely research.
Okay, great. Thank you. Dan, would you mind sharing?
Yes. First of all, I want to say that one of the primary reasons I decided to go to Romania was the excellent reception that I received by the Romanian Fulbright Commission. For those of you not familiar, not all countries have a Fulbright Commission, and a Fulbright Commission is composed of local folks that are there to help you with the whole process. So it really makes a difference, I think. And so that was one really positive factor in choosing Romania. Getting back to why Fulbright, I would say the major thing was that my colleagues and department head had had some of these experiences recently, and they highly recommended them. I was looking to expand my work internationally. Our university currently has about 7 Fulbright scholars, so you can see that the university provides support. So just had a really positive impression and was encouraged to do so, and I'm glad I did. I wish I had learned about this a little bit earlier in my career. So I'll turn it back to you.
Thank you, Dan. In regards to the application process, can you talk a little bit about how you were able to select the country and the specific award? And then once you selected your award, how did you determine the appropriate host institution? And again, we can start with you, Daryl.
In my case, of course, the country was based on the research that I wanted to do, but the institution, I had known that I was at Higher School of Economics, which was mentioned earlier as one of the places that is seeking people in now in law, I believe. High School of Economics is a relatively new university. It just began at the beginning of the 1990s, when it's got a kind of state funding status, plus it has more of an independent status. And it's known as a very liberal university. So it's a place where I could actually go, and even in the current environment where relations are not that great between U.S. and Russia, the university very much welcomes American scholars and has several on their full-time staff in political science and in economics. Recent PhDs have been hired from the U.S. So it's a very welcoming place from that perspective. But it's also a place that had specialists doing similar research to me, and there was one person in particular I wanted to work with, and so that pretty much determined where I wanted to go.
Okay, thank you. And Dan, same question. How did you select your country and award as well as your host institution?
Okay, so I had been to the Republic of Moldova, which is adjoining country with USAID back in 2012. So I learned from that that there is some great opportunities in that part of the world, and the people that I was working with in Moldova, they kind of talked about Romania as being some place they always wanted to go because things were better there. So I explored what would be offered in Romania, and I was fortunate enough to learn that from the Fulbright website that one of the previous Fulbrighters was from an agricultural university in Texas. And so I contacted him and learned about his experience, and he was extremely positive about it. And in fact, that was kind of what led me to Romania overall, was that I interviewed people that had come to the U.S. from Romania, and I also interviewed people in the profession that had Romanian connections, and all of them were, you know, extremely positive and supportive, and so I felt like I could make a successful program there.
Thank you, Dan. And Daryl, I'll take it back to you. Do you have any advice for applicants regarding the project statement or the application process in general that you can share?
I'm a strong advocate of sending your draft proposal around to other people who have been on Fulbrights, either at your own university or in your field, but at other universities, to get feedback. It's also important to keep in mind that some of the readers, maybe many of them, will not be specialists, and so eliminate the jargon as much as possible. So it needs to be understandable to someone who really doesn't know anything about your field. If you do have an institution in mind, and I recommend that you do research on the institution, if possible, contact people there. In my case, I had already talked to, in 2004, the chairman of the department that I wanted to go to, and then I had a friend, this colleague I was working at, was at the in that department later on when I applied again in 2017. So I had quite a bit of information about the department and what its strengths were, and I put that in the application. I think it helped in both getting accepted by Fulbright and at Higher School of Economics, because later on the chairman told me he was very impressed about how much I knew about what kind of scholarship there was in his department and how it was related to what I was working on.
Great, thank you. Same question, Dan. Do you have any advice for applicants regarding the project statement or the overall application process?
So I'll give you a slightly different perspective because I was shooting more in the dark. I applied to the All Disciplines Award. So in that case, you're competing against people from all different specializations. So it's important to have a balance between what you're going to do and kind of, as was mentioned, make your language such that mere mortals can understand what you're talking about. And I did have some help with the application from a few colleagues here in the U.S., and also I sent it to my person I was going to work with in Romania, and she looked at it and provided some suggestions about directions that would be more likely to work out. Than, so it was very helpful to be able to take a general proposal and kind of whittle it down and make it appropriate based on the help I had from my Romanian counterpart as well as other Fulbright veterans.
Great, thank you for sharing. In regards to your experiences and country, Daryl, we can start with you. What are some benefits to doing research and or teaching on a Fulbright?
Well, the institutional support is very important, I think, because when I go there on my own, I also go just as an essential and a tourist visa. It's much more difficult to get access to libraries. Certainly, I've heard horror stories of people going on a tourist visa, giving a presentation at a university, and then being confronted by authorities about not having the appropriate visa. And, of course, if you're there on an official program like this on Fulbright, you have the correct visa. You have the credentials, and so there's no question about what you're allowed to do. I think just from some of the technical aspects of being in a country, having the correct visa, having access to the resources you need, Fulbright is a major advantage. And of course, it's better to be funded from the U.S. than to be funded locally. I think that's always the case, and it's especially true in Russia, where you've had highly underfinanced system of higher education.
Great, thank you. Dan, what are some of the benefits from your perspective to doing teaching and or research on a Fulbright?
So, in general, I'm going to say that I gained more from the general aspects of being in the country and learning from the people there and seeing some things that they do and don't do. That was probably the cultural part of it. To me, was more long-lasting and had a bigger impression than kind of the narrow academic specialization that I have. So I want to emphasize that as a real benefit of this is that not only with the Romanians, but in Romania at the time, we had about 20, 25 Fulbrighters either with the U.S. Scholar Program or college students or recent college students that were teaching English. And the commission had us get together and spend some time together. And so through that, I learned a lot about liberal arts education that I never would have learned at a institution like I'm at, which is primarily technology. So it was very interesting to learn about what is scholarship if you're a in the fine arts, what is scholarship if you are in theater arts or English or whatever you're in. It's quite interesting. As far as the specific research benefits, I'd say that when you have to explain something to somebody in a different culture, you realize that you made a lot of assumptions. And those assumptions are kind of specific to the world you're coming from, and so that sort of internal questioning about what do you know for sure is part of the experience, I think.
Great, thank you. Daryl, can you talk a little bit about how the U.S. Embassy engaged with you on your Fulbright?
Well, one thing, when we first arrived in the country, our whole group of Fulbright scholars, including graduate students who were there, met at the embassy and talked with political officer, I believe the economic officer, chief economic officer, and security officer about concerns we might have, and just to explain what the situation is in country at the time. And that's especially useful to those who don't have any kind of specialization in the country they're going to. The Russian embassy is under particular stress now, and it's been for several years like this because of reductions in personnel that were forced on it by the Russian government. So there is a kind of shortage of staff time to devote to exchanges. So it's less than, like when I was there 15 years ago, 2004, 2005, I had much more connection to the embassy than I did in 2017-18. But it's always nice to know that they're there in case something does go wrong.
Great, thank you. Dan, can you share your experiences engaging with the U.S. Embassy on your grant?
In Romania, the Romanian Fulbright Commission kind of serves as an intermediary between the embassy folks and the Fulbright scholars. So the commission organized several sessions where we heard from various parts of the embassy about matters like were described for Russia. One of the things that was kind of a obstacle to overcome in Romania was that it was sometimes difficult to get the residency permit. That it wasn't because there was anything wrong, it was just kind of a bureaucratic process, and you could get stuck in the cracks. So the commission, I contacted them several times, and they kind of helped me through a part of the process that was getting stuck. So very definitely, they're pretty helpful.
Thank you. Daryl, what was something that impressed you about your colleagues and students?
First, I was very much impressed by the level of English. In fact, I think it's gotten quite a bit better in the last 15 years. I remember when I was first there and I was trying to teach in English, they actually at first wanted me to teach in English, but after we got into the semester, I realized there was a certain contingent of the students in that class who really didn't understand English that well, and so I ended up giving a summary in Russian for those students. But this last trip, I gave some guest lectures. I didn't teach as part of my Fulbright, but I gave guest lectures in several classes. And most of those I did in English. And in fact, there was one class, as Joel Erickson mentioned, there are a lot of university classes that are taught in English. And you get both foreign students who speak English and Russian students who speak English in those classes. I found that the level of English had improved drastically in 15 years. I think there's a much more of an emphasis on it, and I think young people are very interested in learning English, and to them it's a very prestigious thing to have that skill. The faculty, I, of course, worked with one faculty member in particular on joint projects, but I met with many other people in the department because we had monthly research forum that faculty held in that department, and so I would always go to that, and a couple of times I gave presentations at it, and it was a very, very good way to find out what other people were working on and to get input on what I was working on. I think another thing, again, echoing something that Joel said, the internationalization component includes a drive by universities to create research that is publishable in leading journals around the world. And that means they're very much interested in feedback from Americans and scholars who have published in those kinds of journals. because that's an expectation now for them. I found many had already been very successful in doing that, in getting those kinds of publications and in doing research that is at a very high level.
Thank you for sharing, Daryl. Dan, what was something that impressed you about your colleagues or students?
Well, I want to follow up a little bit on something that was mentioned. So in Romania, people that are, say, under about 40 years old, they speak excellent English and you have no problem communicating. You can go anywhere in the city I was in, and English is kind of expected as a knowledge that people have. When you get to the university, you have kind of two bins of faculty. You have those that were there for a while, and then the whole country changed. And those folks are kind of difficult to engage with because their English is not so good. So generally speaking, I would try to target people that were between just being a new faculty member and say about 40, 45, because they would have interest, like was mentioned, in international activity, and they were actually getting promoted based on their ability to integrate internationally and publish in journals and so forth. So that's something to keep in mind, is that your department heads and your administrators are not in this group that usually that has had this experience of internationalization as much. So you've got a bit of a situation where the upwardly mobile folks earlier in career actually have more ambition to be internationalized than do their administrators. My impression anyway. So really what I found to be the most admirable qualities of my colleagues was that they don't always have a lot of resources, physical resources I'm talking about, for doing agriculture research. There's a lot of instrumentation and technology that's needed, but they're very inventive in terms of figuring out ways to get around that limitation. And that's kind of inspiring to me.
Thank you, Dan. Before we move into the Q&A session with our attendees, I wanted to ask you both, do you have any final advice for any prospective applicants working through the process now of completing their materials or are not sure of which country or award that they're interested in? We can start with you, Daryl.
Okay. I think it's highly worth doing, and you know the choice of country really depends in part on what your interests are. I've known faculty in my university who have gone, like there was a public administration scholar who ended up going to Zambia, and he in effect became one of the few American experts on Zambia, on public administration in Zambia, and so there are advantages like that, and you can take your career in a completely different direction. In my case, of course, the Fulbright is really just a way of deepening my own experience in Russia. I found that being there for a 9-month period, which is almost impossible to do without an award similar to Fulbright, but being there for 9 months gives you access to people and an eye on what's happening in the country that is unlike anything you can get from short visits. So it's very important, I think, for understanding the culture, understanding the political life of the country, to be there for a lengthy period of time.
Great, thank you. Dan, is there any final advice you'd like to give?
Well, I think my advice would be to consider teaching kind of broadly, that rather than thinking of yourself being in a classroom and teaching a typical class that has 10 weeks or 14 weeks, how many ever weeks are in your academic calendar, think of yourself a little bit more as a ambassador that has a portfolio of experiences and things to share, and kind of try to do that kind of sharing across a lot of different segments of the university. And I say this because what I found in the Romanian university that I was in was that even though it wasn't a very big university, had about 1,200 students, and it had, you know, not a lot of departments. It had an agriculture department, a horticulture department, and a few others. There's actually kind of an institutional barrier between agriculture and horticulture. So in order to break that barrier, you really had to dedicate yourself to going over to the other building and trying to interface with those folks. And the easiest way to do that is to have a presentation that's of the appropriate length that you can give in various venues. I gave some that were in a session in somebody else's class. I gave some that were kind of special seminars. I gave one that was kind of a advising class. I didn't really have a class that, you know, I had a series of lessons that led to a competency in something. I was more involved in increasing awareness about different things that go on in the U.S. and how they might be relevant to Romanians. On the research side, for a science where you need a lab and you need lab equipment and you need it for it to work properly, I think that's difficult to do in a Fulbright unless you're continuing an ongoing work that you've been doing. I had some of that idea in my plan, and I found that that didn't really work out very well. It takes too long to kind of set up the lab and to get everything organized. So either that has to be done ahead of time some way, or you need to think of something that doesn't require a lot of laboratory setup. Some of the other faculty that were Fulbright scholars in Romania, they were mainly collecting samples, and then they were shipping samples off to another location for the actual analysis. There was one student who was a graduate student there in a Fulbright, and he wanted to use a relatively complicated piece of equipment, and he was not given permission to work with that for many months after he arrived, so that was kind of a frustrating thing for him. So something to keep in mind, that teaching might be more broad, and that research, if it's research involving collecting physical data and conducting some kind of technological analysis, that those are sometimes hard to do.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing, Dan. And as a reminder to our attendees, please type your questions in the question box so that we can have them answered. I do see a couple of questions that are specific to existing applications. As a reminder, if you have begun an application or have questions about completing an application, you can always email europeeurasia@iie.org. Before we conclude the presentation, you will see a slide with all of our contact information. So I will begin by asking some of the questions that are coming in. This is for both Daryl and Dan. How did you acquire your language skills, and how long did it take you to do so?
Okay, I'll address that. I would say that I'm constantly trying to acquire language skills. It's a never-ending process. But I began learning how to read Russian in as a junior in university. Then took courses in spoken language as a graduate student. But it wasn't until I was actually in the country that I began speaking it fluently, in my opinion. Even though I'd had an intensive summer course and at Middlebury, and it really sometimes takes deep immersion before things begin to click, and you can really understand what people are telling you at in real life situations. So I would say that it's a long, maybe lifelong process, in fact, for non-native speakers.
Great, Dan.
So one of the things I didn't mention actually was that I picked Romania specifically because I lack international language skill. Romania uses a Latin alphabet. It's a Romance language similar to French or Spanish. So even if you can't speak Romanian, you can figure out pretty well some of the signs that you're seeing, things at the grocery store, this kind of thing. So that's a real plus for Romania as opposed to places that use a different kind of alphabet like they do in Ukraine or, say, Hungary. So of all of the countries in Eastern Europe, I think Romania is the only one that has a Latin alphabet. So that was actually one of the reasons why I chose it. I didn't learn more than just the typical conversation you need to get by with at the grocery store and in everyday meetings. In general, I would say that Romanians wanted to talk to me in English because they wanted to practice English, because they viewed English, a lot of them, as kind of a way of expanding their opportunities. So I don't know much Romanian, but I didn't really have to, and it didn't seem to cause a problem with me being the ugly American that didn't want to learn the language. So that's kind of my view on it.
Thanks, Dan. The next question is for both of you. Do you have any advice for an applicant who does not have existing institutional contacts in order for them to secure a letter of invitation? Any tips for them to go about requesting that letter of invitation without existing contacts?
That's a question for Joel.
I'll jump in on that. For Russia, you don't need to have a letter like that, because if you have no contacts in Russia, we can work with you to find a good placement, and we can get a letter of invitation for you from that institution. There are rare cases when, for some reason, that institution is not able to generate a letter of invitation, and in those cases, my organization, IIE, can produce a letter of invitation to get you over to Russia. So I wouldn't, I'd think more about your application in terms of thematics and value in the Russian context if you're applying to go to Russia. But no, please, you don't have to be able to get your own letter of invitation. We can help you with that.
Thank you, Joel. This question is for Dan. Based on your own experiences, do you have any suggestions of how activities within the commission could be improved?
Let's see. So this is the Romanian Fulbright Commission?
Yes.
I didn't prepare an answer for that. I don't have anything that's, itching under my skin that they have to change. I think, like I said, they were always pretty available when things needed clarification. I have nothing but good things to say about them, really. I guess maybe they could move from Bucharest to Cluj-Napoca, where I was. That would make it better.
Okay, thank you. Joel, this question would be for you.
Yes.
In regards to the geographic location of Moscow and St. Petersburg, mm-hmm. would an applicant's possibilities be limited because their research was centered in those one of those two cities?
Sure. I mean, naturally, given that Moscow and St. Petersburg are Russia's largest population centers, they have the majority of research institutes. And so, of course, if we get an application from someone who needs to be at an institute or library or what have you, either or cultural institution, either in Moscow or St. Petersburg, well, that's, of course, we're going to see to it that that person is placed in one of those two cities if it's essential for your research. I think that answered the question.
Great, thank you. This question is for both Daryl and Dan. Can you talk a little bit about some of the activities and forms of community engagement you completed outside of your host institution?
Okay. Well, I had a much richer experience in that regard 15 years ago than this most recent trip, just because then there were options like American libraries and, in fact, I took several trips with the support of the U.S. Embassy, the consulate in Yekaterinburg, for example, sponsored a trip for me to go to the Urals, and I spoke at five different institutions there, and gave a lecture about the upcoming American election, presidential election, and then spoke with graduate students at most of those universities. So I think those have become more difficult to arrange in the more recent period, but there are always things that you can volunteer to do. There are often speaking opportunities at the embassy sponsors. So there are a variety of ways, but I think you have to look for them harder now. They don't come to you as they did in years past in the case of Russia.
Thank you, Dan.
So I think there's just no substitute for getting out and seeing the country. And in Romania, it's fairly inexpensive to fly from one part of the country to another and then take local transportation, either train or bus, to different locations. And my wife was on this trip, and so we went on several week-long visits to a part of the country where we hired some local guides and saw some of the sites that there were to see there. One of them that was really interesting was we had a guide that took us down to the Romanian part of the Danube Delta, and we did a lot of bird watching down there in May for several days. So these sorts of opportunities, the guides are typically in Romania, they're all independent contractors, and you kind of get to know them by word of mouth and by asking around. And they'll tell you a lot of, how the world's looking from their viewpoint, and it's quite revealing, interesting, something you wouldn't, get out of a regular tourist trip. So that's one thing. As far as institutionally, I was at one university. There's about five agriculture universities at least in Romania, and I took the initiative and emailed the other universities and asked for an opportunity to visit, and two of those turned into something, and I got support from the Romanian Fulbright Commission to go there and spend time with faculty and see their facilities, talk to them about what's going on in the field, that kind of thing. Yeah, there's more opportunities than you have time to do them. What I found was it takes quite a bit of arranging to get these things put together when you're kind of your own agent for doing this.
Great, thank you. I have another question for both of you. In terms of the outcomes listed in your application, how many of them were you able to actually accomplish?
Well, there, in my case, I had a fairly broad set of goals connected with regional studies, what's going on in Russian regions. And paradoxically, it's best to do that in Moscow rather than in the regions. And so there was, several joint papers came out of it and conference. And I think perhaps the main thing is personal relations that have been developed and that will continue into the future. So I expect to go back to hire. I was invited for last year, for example, to be on a PhD committee. Sat in on the the defense of the PhD at Higher School of Economics. So those relationships are very important, and they're just as important, I would say, as the actual research and research product.
Great, Dan.
So as I mentioned earlier, the actual laboratory-centered research that I hoped to conduct pretty much didn't happen. So I spent more of my time kind of doing the role of teaching, learning, and being an ambassador. Unfortunately, I required medical attention when I was there, so I spent more time than I'd like to mention, learning about the Romanian medical system and having some outpatient surgery there. So that kind of cut into my time. But all of it was good in terms of being in a different place and learning what's the same and what's different. And I highly value it. I do have a number of personal relationships that are ongoing with academics in Romania, and that's probably the biggest output of or outcome of the experience.
Thank you. The next question has to do with dependents. Did either of you take any family members with you, and if so, how was the experience?
So I did not. So I didn't have any dependents with me.
Okay. Dan, I believe you said you took your wife?
Yeah, my wife had just retired from her elementary teaching job, so she was happy to come along and experience Romania. She did some things on her own that were kind of the cultural ambassador kind of thing. She took a class in Romanian language, and through the class she met a Algerian student that was there on a Erasmus program, and she ended up tutoring this Algerian student in speaking English. So oddly enough, one of her outcomes from Romania was learning more about Algeria and Algerian folks. She also participated in some other things locally that I wasn't able to do, and so overall she had a great time there and was pretty happy to have had the experience. We often talk about things we see nowadays that remind us of something that we experienced when we were in Romania.
Great, thank you. The remainder of the questions I can answer, but I will encourage you, if anyone else has any additional questions, to please use the chat function to type your questions in. So we do have a question about how can you determine if a scholar has served in a particular institution? We do have our Fulbright Scholar Directory. If you are on our homepage at CIES.org, you will see a tab for Scholar Directory. You're able to click on that. Once you're in the directory, you can filter it out by country, and you can see each institution that our scholars have affiliated with in the past 10 years. You can also further filter the academic year, so you can see them in chronological order. So this gives you a good idea of where our scholars are going in country. Again, I do see a great deal of specific questions. I'm more than happy to assist you. Before we conclude, I will give you our contact information so that you can send your questions there. Before we conclude, I'm just doing one last call for any final questions in the chat box. Okay, before we conclude, Joel, are there any final words you'd like to say on behalf of Russia?
Well, just if you have any reason to reach out for specific Russian questions, don't hesitate to reach out to me. You can find me easily, Joel Erickson, and I'd be happy to respond. I think Russia can be a place that people don't often consider, considering that there's been some tension at the highest levels. But again, I think people are very pleasantly surprised to come to Russia and find how welcoming the campuses are. So we hope we see applications from you.
Great, thank you. Daryl, Dan, do you have any final words before we conclude?
One thing I'd like to say is that even if you end up going to a city that has lots of tourists, you will find that among students that you meet, and sometimes faculty as well, you'll be the first American that they have ever had a real conversation with. And so it's very important from that perspective, I think. I think when you think about the people-to-people exchange element, it really is an important extension of how the U.S. is seen around the world.
Okay, Dan, any final thoughts?
So this doesn't necessarily, it's not strictly about your application, but it's kind of involved with that. So the letter of invitation was mentioned. So I think what I learned would be that I had a letter of invitation, but it wasn't real specific as to what the responsibilities were of the host institution. So that's probably going to be the general story, that these things happen fairly quickly, and you don't really have time always to nail down all the details. But if you're selected as a scholar, my advice would be to try to flesh out that letter of invitation and be pretty specific about what is expected of them from you and the same. Because once you're there, if they don't provide something that you think that they should, you're kind of stuck. So I don't know how much of that has to go on, initially, but at some point in the process, before you're actually physically there, you should try to nail down anything that you absolutely have to have in order to be successful for your project. So that's it.
Perfect. Thank you. And as a reminder, there are several ways to stay connected with us. I will point out, join my Fulbright at CIES2.org. This is a great way to subscribe to our newsletters. We do have a number of upcoming webinars that you may find of interest. We also archive all of our webinars, so you're able to view any of our previous webinars. If you have any questions at all, please email us at europeyourasia@iie.org. We also have the ability for you to refer any of your colleagues, and we are available on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Again, I'd like to say thank you to both Daryl and Dan. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you, Joel, for joining us. And again, thank you to our attendees for attending. I hope to hear from you soon, and everyone stay safe. Have a great day. Thank you.